Nightfall in New Jersey. Written by Bitter Cape and read by Flower Parish. This is a DC fic, rated explicit, featuring Tim Drake and Gotham City, and the background relationships John Constantine / Jason Todd, Slade Wilson / Jason Todd, and Roy Harper / Jason Todd. This is part 3 of the Killing Time series.
All day permanent red, the glaze on my eyes. When I heard your voice, the distance caught me by surprise again.
Tim feels a familiar tug behind his breastbone, and as he has learned his best to do, he goes where it leads. He thinks it's Gotham, protecting him in her own way, but there's no way to know for sure. It itches at the back of his mind, not knowing, like a hair stuck between his teeth. Annoying, but ultimately harmless. Bruce has been less than forthcoming, not that that's any kind of surprise, but Dick has been equally vague, which is rarer. Luck, Dick says. A hunch. Batman says, in the way that means, I hear what you're saying, and I am choosing not to comment. It's not luck. It's not a hunch. It's a secret third thing. A guiding light, a hand on his shoulder, a handrail in the dark. It might be different for all of them, but Tim is certain it's significantly more different for Jason. He's seen Jason fix onto a crime in progress from several blocks away, turning around in the middle of doing something else, just to change course and rush like a homing pigeon to deliver justice with a bullet to a, usually, non-lethal area, with his fists, or with just looming in the immediate vicinity. He's seen Jason zone out, staring straight at a wall, like he's somewhere else, only to snap out of it the moment something happens, something he can't have seen or heard through any normal means. Naturally, Tim keeps a closer eye on Jason after that. He can't help it. Jason is a mystery, and Tim has never been able to resist those. And that's how he learns any number of interesting things. Namely, when Gotham tugs him and he goes along, even as she leads him down into the sewers. Come here often? Constantine asks, smirk curving his lips and tone unmistakable. The sound carries strangely in the sewers, bringing his voice loud and clear to Tim, where he's hanging back and watching. Jason is covered in vampire rat guts to the elbows. His face tells a whole story about how his thoughts are on a long, long shower and a little nap, rather than anything even remotely sexual. But the way Constantine drags his gaze from Jason's thighs to his chest to his face says that he's on a different track. More often than is ideal, Jason says, and Tim agrees wholeheartedly, if silently. Nobody wants to be down here apart from Waylon, and he is not a fan of rats. I could take you somewhere more comfortable if you like, Constantine says. Tim has never been propositioned in a sewer, and it looks like it's a new situation to Jason as well, but it's got to be an improvement on the regular sewer experience. Jason looks at Constantine, assessing. Tim looks at them both, assessing just as much. Jason, as mentioned, looks like he's dunked his arms elbow deep into a vat of dark red, somehow chunky, paint. He's got a bit in his hair as well. It's dripped down onto his shoulder, and it looks more than a little disgusting. Constantine looks scruffy and disheveled, hair a messy haystack, and is, like Jason, covered in vampire rat guts, but in a spray across his chest rather than up his arms. Tim can see the appeal, actually. Sure, Jason says, if you can offer a shower and a beer.
Thank you.
Jason is on a rooftop, drinking a coffee and dangling his legs over the edge. Constantine is sitting next to him with his own takeaway cup, filled with coffee and a shot of something extra from a flask he pulled from his pocket. Could be bourbon, could be holy water, could be anything. Tim is on a rooftop half a block over, watching through a pair of night vision goggles slash miniature AV recorder he's testing out. Batman is off planet with the Justice League, which is, in all likelihood, why Constantine agreed to come to Gotham. Tim understands Constantine's avoidance of Batman all too well, even if Batman remains blissfully unaware that Constantine's defiling his son on the semi-regular. They don't exactly see eye to eye about the vast majority of things, as far as Tim has observed. "Tell me about Gotham," Constantine says, and Jason blinks. Tim zooms in a little. Their voices carry surprisingly well, microphone picking them up easily despite the distance. "What? It's a city in New Jersey. So many gargoyles that it's an outlier and should not have been counted." Constantine grins and kicks Jason lightly in the ankle. "No, smartarse, I'm talking about Gotham." Jason looks at him, looks out over the city, looks back at Constantine. "She's Gotham," he says. "You can feel her." "Little bit," Constantine says. "Not like you can." Jason hums. "She likes me, or so she says. She guides me when I need it, if I listen. When I stay for longer, I see clearer, but I become more like her." "You're tuned into her magic," Constantine says. "Yeah," Jason says, and his eyes shimmer purple, gold, orange for a moment, clearly visible through the lenses. "She likes you too," he adds. Constantine smiles, brief and sincere. Gotham tugs at his attention, and Tim follows her lead, flicks through surveillance cameras until he lands on a narrow alley. Someone is pushed up against the rough brick wall, and Tim jerks instinctively to jump to the rescue, but then he looks again, and that person is Jason. Constantine has Jason pushed up against an alley wall, leaning heavily into him, using his whole body weight to hold him in place. Not that he weighs even remotely enough to stop Jason if he wanted to break free. And Jason is laughing. He's laughing, wild and happy and free like Tim hasn't seen since Jason was Robin. Tim relaxes back into his slumped position in the chair and goes back to watching. "You're too bloody hot when you do that," Constantine says, and Jason's grin twists into mischievous. Tim briefly considers the fact that his surveillance equipment doesn't usually come with microphones. "Too hot for what?" Jason says, and Constantine groans, bumps his head down on Jason's shoulder, twice. "You're also unbearably smug," Constantine says, and Jason laughs again. "And what are you gonna do about it?" he asks, cheekily. On one hand, Tim would like to look anywhere else, but on the other hand, Gotham probably directed his attention here for a reason. "Can I?" Constantine says, and brushes light fingers over Jason's crotch. Jason's hips stutter into his touch. "Here?" He looks around, even looks up, but doesn't spot the camera. It's not particularly well hidden, so Tim wonders briefly if Gotham is hiding it for whatever reason. "Can't wait to get my mouth on you," Constantine says, and Jason opens his pants as Constantine drops to his knees. Tim keeps half an eye on them, but isn't actually that keen on watching. It feels too close, at least partially because of Gotham's presence, like a clammy hand on his neck. He does see the glowing ropes that wind around Jason's arms, holding him still against the wall, which would perhaps be cause for concern, except for the way Jason very obviously is very into it. As is Constantine, apparently. He opens his pants where he's kneeling on the ground, moving into his own grip in a way that leaves no doubts about what he's doing. Tim taps rapidly to decrease the volume, but it's abundantly clear that both of them are very happy with the situation. He does not stuff his fingers in his ears and start humming, but it's a close call. Afterwards, Jason is loose and relaxed when he leans into Constantine, his body language proclaiming his satisfaction loud and clear. Constantine leans back for long, slow minutes while Gotham hums appreciatively in Tim's bones. "Till next time," Jason says, when they eventually move towards the mouth of the alley and he pulls Constantine in for a brief hug. "I can't stay," Constantine says. "I know," Jason shrugs. "I'd never ask you to." There are threads on Constantine, faint and glowing, thin like spider silk. Tim zooms in a little. There are threads through Constantine, tugging lightly as he moves, catching like hooks, connecting him to the ground where he spilled his cum, to the alley wall where he held Jason, to the bones and sinews of Gotham. To Jason, in shimmering lines. Tim doesn't know what it means, but Gotham seems satisfied. The clammy touch on his neck has turned dry and warm. On the other end of the video feed, Jason's smile is warm and content as Constantine steps away into nothing. Tim sees best through the lens of a camera. It's always been true, but the more he goes where Gotham leads, the more technology works for him in ways it's not designed for. He can see something that isn't exactly the future, but rather a set of paths the future might take. He can see the crossroads where actions have a larger impact, where the butterfly effect takes hold and creates ripples in reality. It doesn't help him make better decisions, unfortunately, he reflects as he's slowly bleeding out in an alley in goddamn Newark, of all places. "For fuck's sake," a deep and growly voice says from the mouth of the alley. "Mr. Wilson," Tim wheezes, because that's fucking Deathstroke coming to haunt him in his final minutes, for whatever reason. "To what do I owe the pleasure?" "You're lucky I was in the area, kid," he says, and then he scoops Tim up like a stray kitten, and the next thing he knows, he's in the backseat of a car while Slade Wilson is having a hissed conversation with someone Tim would swear he calls Villain, but who the hell is villainous enough that Deathstroke would use that as a nickname? He worries briefly about staining the upholstery, and then he doesn't worry about anything at all. He wakes up in a regular bed with an irregular saline drip by his bedside and what feels like an unnecessary number of stitches in his side. "Irk," Tim says, and swings himself upright to put his feet on the floor. Someone has dressed him in a t-shirt he's absolutely swimming in, and his mouth feels like something crawled into it and died. A poisonous snake, maybe. "Welcome back to the land of the living," someone says from the door opening, appearing so silently it's uncanny. "Mr. Wilson," Tim says, because whatever else the man may be, he's dressed like a civilian at the moment, gray sweatpants and a black t-shirt with a washed-out Stark Industries logo. "Mr. Drake," Slade Wilson says, deadpan. "I see you're feeling better." "Yeah, thanks," Tim says. "Where am I? What happened?" "You were bleeding out in an alley, and I got you the medical attention you needed. You're in one of my safe houses, it's been 37 hours, and I expect you're just about starving." Tim's stomach chooses to answer that by rumbling loudly. "Can I have a shower first?" Tim asks, because he desperately needs to take a look at his injuries, and he definitely does not want to strip off his borrowed t-shirt in front of Deathstroke the Terminator. "Sure," Deathstroke shrugs. "Bathroom's through there." He tilts his head in the vague direction of a closed door. "Scrambled eggs, okay?" Tim nods. He's not entirely sure this is real, but at the moment, he'd take a hot breakfast from anyone who's offering. "You know, for someone who was bleeding out, I don't actually have any injuries to speak of," Tim says, once he's inhaled two cups of coffee and a plate full of scrambled eggs. Slade Wilson is getting them both refills and has his back turned, but Tim imagines he can see a slight tensing of his shoulders. "A small blood transfusion," he says, still fussing with the coffee. "Accelerated healing is a temporary side effect." "Huh, that's quite something." Slade, Tim says. Can I call you Slade? Slade turns around, his face unreadable. Thank you, Tim says. I owe you one. Slade says, and pushes a full cup of coffee across the table. He might look a little less tense, but without the filter of a lens, it's hard to tell. Tim sees better through the lens of a camera, and so he starts watching Slade. Not systematically, but whenever he pops up on Tim's radar, he hacks into whatever local surveillance cameras are available. And when he inevitably sees a whole tangle of a decision point, he calls. Slade, being Deathstroke at the moment, does not pick up. Tim, being Tim always, curses while he uses precious minutes to hack into Deathstroke's encrypted comms line. Pick up your phone next time, he says, without any kind of introduction. On his screen, he sees Deathstroke freeze.
Little bird,
Deathstroke says.
Bloody hell,
sighs another voice, who Tim assumes is Wintergreen, Deathstroke's deal broker. You're at a deciding point, Tim says, and he's well aware that sounds either ominous or nonsensical. What's your target? There's a few long seconds of silence, and then Slade sighs and gives him the name. Hold, please, Tim says, and ignores the barrage of questions from Wintergreen while he dives into his database of known active cases and investigations. Ah, the person you're about to assassinate has information Red Hood needs, Tim says.
And this is relevant how?
Slade asks, not unreasonably. I don't know, Tim says, but what you do next is important, and I don't know of anything other than the Red Hood connection that could be significant.
So what do you suggest?
Slade asks. Again, not unreasonably. You've got to be careful about what you choose to do, Tim says. A deciding point is a crossroad. What you do now could alter the course of the future. Slade is silent for a long time. Tim can hear his slow breathing over the comm line.
Send me Red Hood's number,
Slade says. Tim wonders if he's done a good thing or not, but he sends the number and closes the comm connection. It's out of his hands. But inside his veins, Gotham is buzzing. Tim thinks she's happy, but who can really tell? Tim sees best through the lens of a camera, and while he might not have worked with Deathstroke in the field, he recognizes the way he moves on his surveillance feed, even flicking through cameras on his phone screen. Deathstroke is prowling, there's no other word for it, searching through the city for something. Someone. Tim has a fairly good idea about who he's looking for. He follows Deathstroke through the camera feeds, switching views and angles at a speed that would be dizzying to most people, or at least that's Steph's usual complaint, watching from below as he jumps across an intersection, from above as he slides down a fire escape. He barely keeps from laughing when Deathstroke assumes a casual position on a rooftop, leaning on a gargoyle like he just happens to be there, right in Red Hood's path. And sure enough, Red Hood lands silently, less than a minute later. Deathstroke, he says, and he seems unbothered by the assassin running around his territory. What's your business? No business, Slade answers, removing his mask. I was in the area and thought I'd say hello. Tim backtracks his movements. He was absolutely not in the area unless you count the entire eastern seaboard as the area. Hello, Jason says, and takes off his helmet as well. Tim zooms in and can, for the first time, see the fine web while Gotham weaves it between them. Huh. Tim flickers through the feeds, easily identifying crimes in progress elsewhere, sending locations to Oracle through their private channel. Oracle obliges without asking any questions, for now, and directs the other bats away from the edge of the Bowery. He has no doubts Babs will interrogate him later. For now, though, she is almost certainly tapping into the same cameras he's watching through, circling in on the specific rooftop where Deathstroke is, by all appearances, doing a pretty good job of wooing Red Hood. I have a pretty good idea about what he could do to seal the deal, Tim thinks to himself. There's a sharp, sparking feeling in his spine, and it takes him a couple of breathless seconds to identify it. Gotham. Gleeful. Oh, this is not something he wants to be even remotely involved in any way. He shuts down that line of thought mercilessly and spins away from his screens. The creak of his chair sounds uncannily like a giggle. Tim can feel Roy before he sees him. Well, that's not entirely true. Gotham can feel Roy, and the way she feels like a cat purring against Tim's bones tells him that something is going on. Tim goes where Gotham leads him, and he lies down on his front on a rooftop to watch what can be best described as some kind of mating dance. Arsenal is showing off. He's making some very fancy and elaborate trick shots, pinning Red Hood's opponents to the walls and crates, and, memorably, a small trash can. Red Hood has stopped fighting, and instead looks at Arsenal with his head tilted. It looks odd with the helmet on, but Arsenal seems to like it, judging by his increasingly crazy marksmanship. Tim lifts his camera, and the threads of Gotham weaving through Jason are fascinating enough that he momentarily forgets about Arsenal, until a new thread spins out from nothing and out of nothing, connecting Arsenal to Red Hood. Oh, Gotham likes that. She likes that someone is working to get Jason's attention, Tim thinks. Arsenal, Hood says, when the last goon is writhing on the floor with an arrow through his bicep. Red Hood, Arsenal says, and shimmies down from his rooftop. He's a few inches shorter than Hood, and a lot leaner, apart from the arms. Arsenal smiles and takes off his glove before holding out his hand. Hood pauses for a few stretched-out seconds, and then he takes off his own glove and reaches out to grab Arsenal's hand. The reaction is immediate and strange. Hood staggers, and it takes him a visible effort to keep his balance. Tim jerks involuntarily, nearly jumps off to assist, but then Hood's shoulders relax and he reaches with his free hand to take his helmet off. He's still wearing his domino underneath, paranoid like a true bat, so Tim can't see his eyes, but his mouth is soft and his face looks young with wonder. Roy, he says, and it seems to carry a lot more than a single name. Jason, Arsenal says. They stay silent for long minutes. Tim wants a closer look, and without really thinking, he zooms in spite of not watching through the lens of a camera. He nearly scrambles back in shock, but Gotham is heavy on his back and he stays put, sprawled on his front. There are little tendrils twining up Roy's legs, similar to the threads through Constantine and the web between Jason and Slade, light and shimmering, but different, like saplings growing towards the sun. The tendrils snake around Roy's body and out the length of his arm, reaching for Jason through Roy, somehow. He doesn't know what to make of it. You know someone's watching, right? Roy says. Gotham's always watching, Jason says, and Tim's shoulders ease for a moment, until Jason adds, and Tim usually watches too. And it doesn't weird you out? Roy asks, glancing over his shoulder. No more than you weird me out, Jason says, and bumps their shoulders together. Tim can see it coming well ahead, looming on the horizon. A deciding point, a crossroads, a butterfly the size of a building gently flapping its wings. He can't tell a single thing about what is going to happen. Gotham is agitated, restless in her movements against his bones, but she's never said anything to him with words, and her emoting is fractured. But he does pick up on the discrepancies. People doing strange things. Disruptions to their patterns, changing their habits, creating ripples of disturbance through the city. And then, they disappear. Tim is obviously not the one looking into it, but the regular levels of Gotham's crime nonsense have not decreased noticeably, so nobody has the time to devote their full attention to it, not until several things happen in quick succession. Gotham both calms down and amps up. That is to say, she's less agitated, but more focused, clearer in his perception than usual. The moon swells to unnatural proportions, and Deathstroke and Arsenal show up at the border. "I'll go find out what they want," he says over the comms when Oracle alerts them. "I'm closest." He is, but only because Gotham has nudged him in that direction for the past half hour. And he's absolutely positive nobody wants Batman to go interrogate Deathstroke about what he's doing in Gotham. "Where's Hood?" they ask, and Tim hasn't seen him, didn't even know he was here, but Roy takes his hand and he's drowning in Jason. It's overwhelming, like a slipstream, like the tide rolling out, inevitable, a force of nature. Gotham shoves him as he mentally flails, and oh, it's not a tide, it's a maelstrom. "Here," he says, somehow not sounding like he's about to be pulled under. "Here's the center." And then he leads them to Jason. The end.
"Well, I know I had it all on the line, but don't just sit with folded hands and become blind. 'Cause even when there is no star in sight, you'll always be my own.